Leo had said.
"Made to measure," the old man whispered. "See that, Maggie?"
Yes, this time he obviously had thought of everything. The giant looked disappointed. He reached up once more, and then took a step to one side. His heel missed the Black Prince by no more than a twig's breadth. The bear roared and stood up on his hind legs, and the giant, in surprise, looked down at what was there between his feet.
"Oh, no," faltered Fenolia.
"No, no, no,"
he shouted down to his creation. "Not him. Leave the prince alone. That's not what you're here for. Go after the milksop. Take some of his men if you want anyone. Go on. Go away."
The giant raised his head, looking to see who was shouting like that. But then he bent and picked up the prince and the bear with as little ceremony as Eleanor picking caterpillars off her roses.
"No," stammered Fenolio. "What's going on now? What went wrong this time? He'll break every bone in the prince's body."
The robbers hung from their ropes, frozen rigid. One of them threw his knife down at the giant's hand. The giant pulled it out with his lips like a thorn and dropped the Black Prince as he might have dropped a toy. Maggie flinched as he struck the ground and lay there without moving. She heard Eleanor scream while the giant hit out at the men on the ropes as if they were wasps trying to sting him. Everyone was shouting in confusion. Batista ran to one of the ropes to go to the prince's aid. Farid and Doria followed him, and even Eleanor ran after him, while Roxanne stood there, horrified, with her arms around two crying children. As for Fenolio, he was shaking at the ropes hanging from the tree in helpless fury.
"No!" he shouted down once more. "No, you just can't do that!"
And suddenly, one of the ropes tore away, and he fell into the void below. Maggie tried to grab him, but she arrived too late. Fenolia was falling, with an expression of surprise on his wrinkled face, and the giant caught him in midair, like a ripe fruit dropping from the tree. The children had stopped screaming. The women and the robbers were silent too, as the giant sat down at the foot of the tree and examined his catch. He put the bear carelessly on the ground, but as he did so, his glance fell on the unconscious prince, and he picked him up again. Roaring, the bear went to his master's aid, but the giant just flicked him away with his hand. Then he rose to his feet, looked up at the children one last time, and strode away with Fenolio in his right hand and the Black Prince in his left. Chapter 59. The Blue Jays' Angels. Orpheus had seen Violante for the first time at one of the milksop's banquets, and even then he had wondered what it would be like to rule Ombra at her side. All his maids were more beautiful than the Adderhead's daughter, but Violante had something that they did not possess. Arrogance, ambition, the lust for power. All of that appealed to Orpheus, and when the piper led her into the Hall of a Thousand Windows, his heart beat faster as he saw how high she still held her head, even though she had staked everything on a single card and lost. Her gaze passed over them all as if they were the losers. Her father, Thumbling, the piper. She only had a fleeting glance for Orpheus, but never mind. How was she to know what a prominent part he would play in the future? The Adderhead would still be stuck in the mud with a broken wheel if he hadn't read him four new coach wheels on the spot. How everyone had stared. Even Thumbling had learned to respect him. The Hall of a Thousand Windows had no windows anymore. Thumbling had had them draped with black cloth, and only half a dozen torches gave light in the darkness, just enough of it to show the Adderhead the face of his worst enemy. When they pushed Mortimer in, Violante's haughty mask cracked, but she quickly pulled herself together. Orpheus saw with satisfaction that they had not treated the Blue Jay particularly gently, but he could still stand, and the piper had certainly made sure his hands were unharmed. They could have cut out his tongue, though, thought Orpheus, thus putting an end to all the fulsome praise of his voice once and for all. But then it occurred to him that Mortimer still had to tell him where Fenolio's book was, since Dustfinger hadn't given its whereabouts away.
The torchlight fell only on Mortimer. The Adderhead sat in darkness. He clearly didn't want to give his prisoner the satisfaction of seeing his bloated body. Anyone could smell it, though.
"Well, Blue Jay, did my daughter describe this meeting of ours rather differently to you?" "Very likely."
The Adderhead's breath rattled in his throat like an old man's.
"I was very glad when Violante suggested this castle as our meeting place. Although the journey here wasn't easy. The castle gave me happiness once before, if not for very long, and I was sure that her mother hadn't told her about the secret passage. She told her daughter a great deal about this castle, but little of it had anything to do with reality."
Violante's face remained expressionless.
"I don't know what you're talking about, Father," she said.
What an effort she was making not to look at Mortimer. Touching.
"No, you don't know anything. That's the point,"
the Adderhead laughed.
"I often had people posted to overhear what your mother told you in the old chamber. All the stories about her happy childhood days. The sweet lies told to make her ugly little daughter dream of a place so different from the castle where she really grew up. Reality isn't usually much like what we say about it. But you always confuse the words with the truth. Just the same as your mother. You could never distinguish between what you want and the way things really are, could you?"
Violante did not reply. She simply stood there, as upright as ever, staring into the darkness where her father was concealed.
"When I met your mother for the first time in this hall," the Adderhead went on in his hoarse voice, "she wanted nothing but to get away from here. She'd have tried to run away if her father had given her any chance. Did she tell you that one of her sisters fell to her death climbing out of one of these windows? Or that she herself was almost drowned by the water nymphs when she tried swimming across the lake? Presumably not. Instead, she made out that I forced her father to give me her hand in marriage and took her away from here against her will. Who knows? Perhaps she even believed that story herself in the end."
"You're lying." Violante was trying very hard to sound composed. "I don't want to hear any more."
"But hear it you will,"
said the Adderhead, unmoved.
"It's time you stopped hiding behind pretty stories and heard the facts. Your grandfather was only too inclined to make sure that any suitors of his daughters disappeared. So your mother showed me the tunnel. The one that enabled the Piper to get into the castle entirely unnoticed. She was madly in love with me at the time, whatever she may have said to you."
"Why are you telling me these lies?"
Violante still held her head high, but her voice was trembling.
"It wasn't my mother who showed you the tunnel. It must have been one of your spies. And she never loved you either."
"Believe what you like. I assume you don't know very much about love."
The Adderhead coughed and rose with a groan from the chair where he was sitting. Violante retreated as he stepped into the torchlight.
"Yes, see what your noble robber has done to me,"
said the Adderhead as he slowly approached Mortimer. It was getting more and more painful for him to walk. Orpheus had seen that often enough on the endless journey to this bleak castle. But the Silver Prince still stood as straight as his daughter.
"But let's not discuss the past any more," he said,
when he was so close to Mortimer that his prisoner had the full benefit of the odor he gave off.
"Or about the way my daughter may have envisaged this bargain. Convince me that it really doesn't make sense for me to flay you alive at once, and do the same to your wife and daughter. Yes, you left them with the Black Prince, but I know about the cave where they're hiding. I assume that my useless brother-in-law has captured them by now and will be taking them to Umbra.
Ah, that really got through to Mortimer. Guess who told the Adderhead about the cave, noble robber? Thought Orpheus, smiling broadly when Mortimer looked at him.
So now...
The Adderhead drove his gloved fist into his prisoner's chest, just where Mortola had wounded him.
What are the prospects? Can you reverse your own trick? Can you cure the book you so craftily used to deceive me?
Mortimer hesitated for only a moment. Of course, he replied. If you give it to me. Very well. Orpheus had to admit that Mortimer's voice still sounded impressive, even in these dire straits, although his own sounded far, far better. But the Adderhead wasn't to be beguiled this time. He struck Mortimer in the face so hard that he fell to his knees.
Do you seriously expect to fool me again? He snarled. How stupid do you think I am? No one can cure this book. Dozens of your fellow craftsmen have died to give me that information. No, it's past saving, which means that my flesh will rot for all eternity, and every day I'll be tempted to write the three words in it myself and put an end to all this. But I have thought of a better solution. And I'll require your services for it once more after all, which is why I am truly grateful to my daughter for taking such good care of you. Because, of course, he added, glancing at the piper, I know what a hot temper my silver-nosed herald has.
The piper was going to say something, but the Adderhead merely raised his hand impatiently and turned back to Mortimer.
What kind of solution?
The famous voice sounded hoarse. Was the Blue Jay afraid now, after all? Orpheus felt like a boy enjoying a particularly exciting passage in a book. I hope he's afraid, he thought, and I hope this is one of the last chapters he appears in. Mortimer's face twisted when the piper pressed his knife against his ribs. Oh, yes, he's obviously made the wrong enemies in this story, thought Orpheus, and the wrong friends. But that was high-minded heroes for you. Stupid.
What kind of solution?
The Adderhead scratched his itching flesh.
You'll bind me another book, what else? But this time you won't go unobserved for a single second. And once this new book, with its spotlessly white pages, protects me from death again, we'll write your name in the other one. So that you can know for a while how it feels to be rotting alive. After that, I'll tear it to pieces page by page, and watch as you feel your flesh tearing, and you beg the white women to come for you. Doesn't that sound like a solution? Satisfactory to all parties.
Ah, a new white book. Not a bad idea, thought Orpheus. But my name would suit its brand new pages so much better. Stop dreaming, Orpheus, he told himself. The piper had his knife to Mortimer's throat.
Well, what's your answer, Blue Jay? Want me to carve it into you with my knife?
Mortimer said nothing.
Answer,
the piper snarled at him.
Or shall I do it for you? There's only one answer anyway.
Mortimer still said nothing. But Violante appointed herself to speak for him.
Why should he help you, if you're going to kill him in any case? She asked her father.
The Adderhead shrugged his heavy shoulders.
I could let him die in a rather less painful way, or just send his wife and daughter to the mines instead of killing them. After all, we've bargained for those two once before.
But this time, they're not in your hands. Mortimer's voice sounded as if he were very far away. He's going to say no, thought Orpheus in astonishment. What a fool!
Not yet, but they soon will be.
The piper let his knife slide down Mortimer's chest, and its point traced a heart over the place where the real one beat.
Orpheus has given us a very detailed description of the place where they're hiding. You heard. The milksop is presumably taking them to Umbra at this very moment.
For the second time, Mortimer looked at Orpheus, and the hatred in his eyes was sweeter than the little cakes that Oss was sent to buy for him in Umbra Market every Friday.
Well, there'd be no more Oss now. Unfortunately, the nightmare had eaten him when it slipped out of Fenolio's words. It had taken Orpheus some time to get it under control, but he could always find a new bodyguard.
You can get down to work at once. Your noble patroness, very usefully, has made sure everything you'll need is here,
spat the piper, and this time blood flowed when he pressed his knife against Mortimer's throat.
Obviously, she wanted to provide every last detail to make us think you were really still alive, only to cure the book. What a farce. Ah, well, she always had a weakness for strolling players.
Mortimer ignored the piper, as if he were invisible. He looked only at the adder head.
No, he said. The word hung heavily in the dark hall. I will not bind you another book. Death would not forgive me a second time for that.
Violante instinctively took a step toward Mortimer, but he took no notice of her.
Don't listen to him, she told her father. He'll do it. Just give him a little time.
Oh, so she really was fond of the blue jay.
Orpheus frowned. One more reason to wish him to the devil.
The adderhead looked thoughtfully at his daughter.
Why would you want him to do it?
Well, you...
For the first time, Violante's voice betrayed uncertainty.
He'll make you well again.
So... The Silver Prince was breathing heavily.
You want to see me dead. Don't deny it. I like that. It shows that my blood flows in your veins. Sometimes I think I really should put you on the throne of Umbra. You'd certainly fill the position better than my silver-powdered brother-in-law.
Of course I would. I'd send 6 times as much silver to the Castle of Night, because I wouldn't be squandering it on banquets and hunting parties. But for that, you must leave me the blue jay, once he's done what you want.
Impressive. She was actually still making conditions. Oh, yes, I like her, thought Orpheus. I like her very much. She just has to have her weakness for lawless bookbinders driven out of her. But then, what possibilities? Obviously, the adderhead was appreciating his daughter more and more as well. He laughed louder than Orpheus had ever heard him laugh before.
Look at her, he cried, bargaining with me, even though she stands there empty-handed. Take her to her room, he ordered one of his soldiers, but watch her carefully, and send Jacobo to her. A son should be with his mother. You, however, he said, turning to Mortimer, will finally agree to my demand, or I'll have my bodyguard torture a yes out of you.
The piper, aggrieved, lowered his knife when Thumbling stepped out of the darkness. Violante cast him an uneasy glance and resisted when the soldier dragged her away with him, but Mortimer still remained silent. Your Grace, Orpheus took a respectful step forward. At least he hoped it looked respectful. Let me get him to consent. A whispered name, for you just have to call the creatures by their right names like dogs. And the nightmare emerged from Orpheus's shadow.
Not the nightmare,
the piper said forcefully.
You want to see the blue jay dead on the spot like the fire dancer? No.
He had Mortimer hauled to his feet again.
Didn't you hear? I'm dealing with this, piper.
Thumbling took off his black gloves. Orpheus tasted disappointment like bitter almonds on his tongue. What a chance to show the adderhead how useful he was. If he'd only had Fenolio's book, so that he could use it to write the piper right out of this world. And that Thumbling fellow, too.
My lord, please listen to me.
He stepped in front of the adderhead. May I ask for the answer to an additional question to be extracted from the prisoner in the course of what, I'm sure, he will find a rather uncomfortable process.
You'll remember the book I told you about, the book that can change this world in any way you like. Please, get him to say where it is.
but the adder head just turned his back.
"Later,"
he said, and dropped back with another groan into the chair where the shadows hid him.
"We're talking about only one book now, a book with white pages. You can start stumbling," said his gasping voice in the darkness. "But take care of his hands."
When Orpheus felt the sudden chill on his face, he thought at first that the night wind was blowing through the black-draped windows. But there they were, standing beside the blue jay, as white and terrible as they had been in the graveyard of the strolling players. They surrounded Mortimer like flightless angels, their limbs made of mist, their faces white as bleached bone. The piper stumbled back so hastily that he fell and cut himself on his own knife. Even Thumbling's face lost its look of indifference, and the soldiers who had been guarding Mortimer flinched back like frightened children. It couldn't be true. Why were they protecting him? As thanks to him for tricking them more than once, for stealing Dustfinger away from them? Orpheus felt the nightmare cower like a beaten dog. So even the nightmare feared them. No, no, for heaven's sake, this world really must be rewritten, and he was the man to do it. Yes, indeed, he'd find a way. What were they whispering? The pale light, spread by the Daughters of Death, drove away the shadows where the Adderhead was concealed, and Orpheus saw the Silver Prince fighting for breath in his dark corner, putting his shaking hands over his eyes. So he was still afraid of the White Women, even though he had killed so many men in the Castle of Night to prove that he wasn't. All lies. The Adderhead in his immortal body was breathless with fear. But Mortimer stood among Fenolio's angels of death as if they were a part of him, and smiled. Chapter 60. Mother and Son. Of course the Adderhead had Violante locked in her mother's former chamber. He knew very well that she would just hear the many lies his late wife had told her all the more clearly there. It couldn't be true. Her mother had never lied to her. Mother and father had always meant good and bad, truth and lies, love and hate. It had been so simple. But now her father had taken that from her too. Violante searched inside herself for her pride and the strength she had always preserved. But all she found was an ugly little girl sitting in the dust of her hopes, at the heart of her mother's shattered image. She leaned her forehead against the barred door and listened for the blue jay's screams. But she heard only the guards talking outside her door. Oh, why hadn't he said yes? Because he thought she'd still be able to shield him? Thumbling would soon teach him better. She couldn't help thinking of the minstrel whom her father had had quartered, because he had sung for her mother, and the servant who had brought her books and was starved to death in a cage outside her window. She had given him parchment to eat. How could she have promised the blue jay protection, when those who were on her side had always gone to their deaths?
"Thumbling will slice strips off his skin,"
Jacopo's voice hardly reached her.
"They say he does it so skillfully that his victims don't die. He's said to have practiced on dead bodies." "Be quiet,"
she felt like slapping his pale face. He was growing more and more like Cosimo every day, although he would so much rather have been like his grandfather.
"You can't hear anything from here. They'll take him down to the cellar near the dungeons. I've been there. All the instruments are still in place, rusty, but they're still fit for use. Chains, knives, screws, iron spikes."
Violante looked at him, and he fell silent. She went to the window, but the cage where they had first imprisoned the blue jay was empty. Only the fire dancer lay dead outside it. Strange that the ravens hadn't touched him, as if they were afraid to. Jacopo took the plate of food that one of the maids had brought him and sulkily picked at it. How old was he now? She couldn't remember. At least he'd stopped wearing that tin nose since the piper had made fun of him for it.
"You like him."
"Who?"
"The blue jay. He's better than any of them."
Once again she listened at the door.
Why hadn't he said yes?
Then perhaps she might yet have been able to save him.
"If the blue jay makes another book,
Will Grandfather still go on smelling so bad? I think he will. I think he'll just fall down dead some day. He looks dead already, really.
How indifferent he sounded. A few months ago, Jacopo had still adored her father. Were all children like that? How would she know? She had just one child. Children. Violante still saw them running out of the castle gate in Ombra and into their mother's arms. If the blue jay died for them, were they really worth it?
I don't like looking at Grandfather any more.
Jacopo shuddered and put his hands over his eyes.
If he dies, I'll be king, won't I?
The chill in his clear voice both impressed and alarmed Violante.
No, you won't. Not after your father attacked him. His own son will be king. King in the Castle of Night and in Ombra. But he's only a baby.
So his mother will reign for him and the milksop. What's more, Violante added in her thoughts, your grandfather is still immortal, and no one seems to be able to do anything about it. Not for all eternity. Jacopo pushed his plate aside and strolled over to Brianna. She was embroidering a picture of a horseman who looked suspiciously like Cosimo, although Brianna said he was the hero of an old fairy tale. It did Violante good to have Brianna with her again, although the girl had been even more silent than usual since the nightmare had killed her father. Perhaps she had loved him after all. Most daughters loved their fathers.
Brianna!
Jacopo thrust a hand into her beautiful hair.
Read to me! Go on! I'm bored!
You can read for yourself. In fact, you can read very well.
Brianna removed his fingers from her hair and went on with her embroidery.
I'll fetch the nightmare!
Jacopo's voice rose shrilly, as it always did when he didn't get his own way.
I'll fetch it to eat you like your father! Oh no, I forgot it didn't eat him. He's lying dead out in the courtyard, with ravens pecking around him.
Brianna didn't even raise her head, but Violante saw her hands trembling so violently that she pricked her finger.
Jacopo!
Her son turned to her, and for a moment Violante thought his eyes were begging her to say more.
Shake me, hit me, punish me, said those eyes, or take me in your arms. I'm scared. I hate this castle. I want to go away.
She hadn't wanted children. She didn't know how to deal with them. But Cosimo's father had begged for a grandson. How was she supposed to deal with a child? She could hardly manage to keep her own painful heart together. If only it had at least been a girl. The blue jay had a daughter. Everyone said he loved her very much. Perhaps he'd give in, after all, for the daughter's sake, and bind her father a second book. If the milksop really did catch the girl. And then? She didn't want to think about his wife. Perhaps she was dying anyway. The milksop liked treating those he hunted cruelly.
Read! Read to me!
Jacopo was still standing in front of Brianna. He snatched the embroidery from her lap, so roughly that she pricked her hand again.
That looks like my father!
No, it doesn't.
Brianna cast a quick glance at Violante.
Yes, it does. Why don't you ask the blue jay to bring him back from the dead, the way he brought your father back?
Once Brianna would have slapped him, but Cosimo's death had broken something in her. She was soft now, like the inside of a shellfish, soft and full of pain. All the same, her company was better than none. And Violante slept much more easily when Brianna sang for her in the evenings. Outside, someone pushed back the bolt. What did that mean? Were they coming to tell her that the piper had killed the blue jay after all? That Thumbling had broken him, like so many men before? And if so, she asked herself, what difference does it make? Your heart is broken into pieces anyway. But it was Four Eyes who came in. Orpheus, or Moonface, as the piper derisively called him. Violante still couldn't understand how he had insinuated himself into her father's good graces so swiftly. Perhaps it was his voice. It was almost as beautiful as the blue jay's, but something in it made Violante shudder. Your Highness. Her visitor bowed so low that the bow verged on mockery.
Has the blue jay given my father the right answer after all?
No, I'm afraid not. But he is still alive, if that's what you wanted to know. His eyes looked so innocent through those round glasses. Glasses that she had copied from him, except that, unlike Four Eyes, Violante didn't always wear hers. Sometimes she preferred to see the world through a blur.
Where is he?
Ah, so you've seen the empty cage. Well, I suggested to the Adderhead different accommodation for the Blue Jay. You presumably know about the dungeons where your grandfather used to throw his prisoners. Once in there, I'm sure our noble robber will very soon give up the idea of resisting your father's wishes. But let's come to the reason for my visit. His smile was as sweet as syrup. What did he want from her? Your Highness. His voice stroked Violante's skin like the hare's foot that Balbulus used to smooth parchment. Like you, I am a great lover of books. Sad to say, I hear that the library of this castle is in terrible condition. But it has also come to my ears that you still have a few books with you. Would it be possible for me to borrow one, or maybe even two? Of course, I would show my appreciation of the loan in every possible way.
What about my book?
Jacopo pushed in front of Violante, his arms folded in the pose his grandfather used to adopt before his swollen arms had made even that gesture painful.
You haven't given it back to me yet. You owe me...
He counted on his short fingers.
You owe me 12 silver coins.
The look Orpheus gave Jacopo was neither warm nor sweet, but his voice was still both. Why, of course, what a good thing you've reminded me of it, Prince. Come to my room, and I'll give you the coins and your book back. But now let me speak to your mother, will you? With an apologetic smile, he turned back to Violante. Well, what do you say? He asked, lowering his voice to a confidential tone. Would you lend me one, Your Highness? I've heard wonderful things about your books, and believe me, I will treat them with the utmost care.
She only has two with her.
Jacopo pointed to the chest beside the bed.
And they're both about the blue...
Violante clapped her hand over his mouth, but Orpheus was already making for the chest.
I'm sorry, she said, barring his way. I am too much attached to these books to let them out of my hands. And as I'm sure you have heard, my father has seen to it that Balbulus can't illuminate any more books for me.
Orpheus hardly seemed to be listening. He was staring spellbound at the chest. May I at least take a look at them?
Don't let him have them.
Clearly, Orpheus hadn't even noticed Brianna. His face froze when he heard her voice behind him, and his plump fingers clenched into fists. Brianna stood up and returned his hostile glance with composure.
He does strange things with books, she said. Books and the words in them. And he hates the Blue Jay. My father said he tried selling him to death.
Poor, confused creature, stammered Orpheus, but he was visibly nervous as he adjusted his glasses. She was my maid, as presumably you know, and I caught her stealing. No doubt that's why she says such things about me. Brianna turned as red as if he had thrown hot water in her face, but Violante moved to her side to defend her.
Brianna would never steal, she said. Now go away, please. I can't give you the books.
Oh, so she'd never steal. Orpheus was clearly having some difficulty in giving his voice its old velvety sound. As far as I know, she stole your husband from you, didn't she?
Here you are.
Before Violante could react, Jacopo was standing in front of Orpheus, holding her books.
Which one do you want? She likes reading the thicker book most, but this time you must pay me more than you paid me for my own book.
Violante tried to snatch the books from his hands, but Jacopo was surprisingly strong, and Orpheus hastily opened the door. Quick, take these books to safekeeping, he ordered the soldier on guard outside. The man had no difficulty in getting the books away from Jacopo. Orpheus opened them, read a few lines first from one, then from the other, and gave Violante a triumphant smile. Yes, exactly the reading matter I need, he said. You'll get them back as soon as they've served their purpose. But these books, he added to Jacopo, pinching his cheek roughly, I'm borrowing for free, you greedy son of a dead prince. And we can forget about any payment for your other book, too. Or do you want to meet my nightmare? I'm sure you've heard of it. Jacopo just stared at him with a mixture of fear and hatred on his thin face. Orpheus, however, bowed and went out through the doorway. "I really can't thank you enough, Your Highness," he said by way of farewell. "You have no idea how happy these books make me. Now the Blue Jay is certain to give your father the right answer soon." Jacopo was chewing his lip hard as the guard outside shot the bolt again. He always did that when something hadn't gone the way he wanted. Violante slapped his face so hard that he stumbled against her bed and fell. He began crying without a sound, his eyes fixed on her like a dog that has been punished. Brianna helped him up and wiped his tears away with her dress.
"What is Four Eyes going to do with the books?"
Violante was shivering. She was shivering all over. She had a new enemy.
"I don't know," Brianna replied. "All I do know is that my father took one away from him because he had done great harm with it."
Great harm. Now the Blue Jay is certain to give your father the right answer soon. Chapter 61. Clothed and Unclothed. It was easy to fly. So easy. The skill of it came with the body, with every feather and every delicate bone. For the seeds had turned Risa into a bird. The transformation caused painful spasms, which had terrified Lazaro the strong man, but she hadn't turned into a magpie like Mortola. "A swift," the strong man had whispered, when she flew to his hand, dizzy to find everything suddenly so much larger. "Swifts are nice birds, very nice. It suits you." He had very gently stroked her wings with his forefinger, and it seemed so strange that she couldn't smile at him with her beak. But she could speak in her human voice, which alarmed poor Tullio even more. Her feathers warmed her, and the guards on the banks of the lake didn't even look up as she flew over their heads. Obviously, they hadn't yet found the soldiers the strong man had killed. The crests on their grey cloaks reminded Risa of the dungeons of the Castle of Night. "Forget them," she thought, as she spread her wings on the wind. "That's in the past. But perhaps you can still change what's yet to come." Or was life, after all, only a tangle of threads spun by fate, and there was no escaping it? "Don't think, Risa," she told herself. "Fly." Where was he? Where was Mo? "The Piper has locked him up in a cage." Tullio hadn't been able to say just where that cage stood. "In a courtyard," he had stammered. "A courtyard full of painted birds." Risa had heard about the painted walls of the castle. From the outside, however, its walls were almost black, built of the dark stone also found on the banks of the lake. She was glad she didn't have to cross the bridge, which was swarming with soldiers. It was raining, and the raindrops made endless circles on the water below her. But her body weighed very little, and flying was a wonderful sensation. She saw her reflection underneath her. It shot across the waves like an arrow. And at last the towers rose to meet her, the fortified walls, the slate-grey roofs, and among them courtyards, gaping dark holes in the pattern of the stone. She spotted trees with bare branches, dog runs, a frozen garden, and soldiers everywhere. But cages. When she finally found them, at first she saw only Dustfinger, lying where he had been thrown on the grey paving stones like a bundle of old clothes. Oh, God, she would never have wanted to see him like that again. There was a child standing beside him, staring at the still body as if waiting for it to move, just as it had done once before, if the songs of the strolling players told the truth. "And they do tell the truth," Risa wanted to call down. "I felt his warm hands. I've seen him smile again and kiss his wife." But when she saw him lying there, it was as if he had never moved since he died in the mine. She didn't see the cages until she dived below the slate rooftops. They were all empty. No trace of Mo. Empty cages and an empty body. She wanted to let herself drop like a stone, hit the paving, and lie there as motionless as Dustfinger. The child turned. He was the boy she had last seen standing on the battlements in Umbra, Violante's son. Even Meggie, who would usually take any child on her lap with such tenderness, spoke of him only with dislike. Jacopo. For a moment, he stared up at Risa as if he could see the woman under the feathers. But then he bent over the dead man again, touched the rigid face, and straightened up when someone called his name. There was no mistaking that strained nasal voice. The Piper. Risa flew up to the ridge of a roof.
"Come along. Your grandfather wants to see you."
The Piper took the boy by the scruff of his neck and pushed him roughly toward the nearest flight of steps.
"What for?"
Jacopo's voice sounded like a ridiculous echo of his grandfather's, but it was also the voice of a little boy lost among all the grown-ups, fatherless and motherless, judging by all Roxanne had said about Violante's lack of love for him.
"What do you think he wants you for? He's certainly not pining away for your peevish company."
The Piper thumped Jacopo on the back with his fist.
"He wants to know what your mother says when you're alone in her room with her."
"She doesn't talk to me."
"Oh, I don't like to hear that. What are we to do with you if you're no use as a spy? Maybe we ought to feed you to the nightmare. It's a long time since the creature had anything to eat, and if your grandfather gets his way, it won't get to taste the blue jay in a hurry either."
Nightmare. So Tullio had told the truth. As soon as the voices died away, Risa fluttered down to Dustfinger. But the swift couldn't weep any more than she could smile. "Fly after the Piper, Risa," she told herself as she perched on the stones, wet with rain. "Look for Mo. There's no more you can do for the Fire Dancer now, any more than you could before." She was only thankful that the nightmare hadn't feasted on him as it had on Snapper. His cheek was so cold when she pressed her feathered head against it. "How did you come by that pretty dress of feathers, Risa?" The whisper came from nowhere, out of the rain, the moist air, the painted stone, but surely not from the cold lips. Yet it was Dustfinger's voice, husky and soft at the same time, ever familiar. Risa swiftly turned her bird's head and heard his quiet laughter. "Didn't you look around like that for me before, back in the dungeons of the Castle of Night? I was invisible then too, as far as I remember. But it's far more entertaining to be without a body. Although you can't enjoy the entertainment too long. I'm afraid if I let my body lie here much longer, it won't fit me any more. And then I suppose not even your husband's voice could bring me back. Apart from the fact that without the help of the flesh, you soon forget who you are. I admit I'd almost forgotten already, until I saw you." It was like seeing a sleeper wake when the dead man moved. Dustfinger pushed back the damp hair from his face and looked down at himself, as if to make sure that his body did still fit him. It was just as Risa had dreamed it the night after his first death, when he did not wake again. Not until Mo brought him back to life. "Mo." She fluttered up onto Dustfinger's arm, but he put a warning finger to his lips as she opened her beak. He called Gwyn with a soft whistle, then looked up at the steps that the Piper had climbed with Jacopo, to the windows on their left, and on again to the Oriel Tower, casting its shadow down on them. "The fairies tell tales of a plant that turns human beings into animals and animals into humans," he whispered, "but they also say it's dangerous to use it. How long have you been wearing your feathered clothing?" "About 2 hours. Then it's time to take it off again. Luckily, this castle has many forgotten chambers, and I explored them all before the Piper arrived." He put out his hand, and Risa perched on his skin, now warm again. He was alive, wasn't he? "I brought back a few very useful abilities from the realm of death," whispered Dustfinger, as he carried her down a passage painted with fish and water nymphs, so true to life that Risa felt as if the lake had swallowed them up. "I can take off this body like a garment. I can give fire a soul. And I can read your husband's heart better than the letters you took such trouble to teach me." He pushed the door open. No window let any light into the room beyond, but Dustfinger whispered, and the walls were covered with sparks, as if they were growing a fiery coat. When Risa spat out the seeds she had been holding under her tongue, 2 were missing. And for a terrible moment, she was afraid she would be a bird forever. But her body still remembered itself. When she had human limbs again, she instinctively stroked her belly and wondered whether the child inside it was changed by the seeds, too. The idea frightened her so much that she was almost sick. Dustfinger picked up a swift's feather lying at her feet and looked at it thoughtfully.
"Roxanne is well," said Risa. He smiled.
"I know."
He seemed to know everything.
So she told him nothing about either Snapper or Mortola, or how the Black Prince had nearly died. And Dustfinger did not ask why she had followed Mo.
"What about the nightmare?"
Even speaking the word frightened her.
"I slipped through its black paws just in time."
He rubbed a hand over his face, as if to wipe a shadow away.
"Luckily, creatures of its kind aren't interested in dead men."
"Where did it come from?"
"Orpheus brought it here with him. It follows him like a dog."
"Orpheus?"
But that was impossible. Orpheus was in Umbra, drowning his sorrows in drink and wallowing in self-pity, as he had been doing ever since Dustfinger stole the book from him.
"That's right, Orpheus. I don't know how he fixed it, but he serves the Adder now.
And he's just had your husband thrown into one of the dungeons under the castle." Footsteps could be heard above them, but they soon died away.
"Take me to him."
"You can't go there. The cells are deep down and well guarded. I may be able to do it alone, but two of us would attract far too much attention. This castle will be teeming with soldiers once they discover that the Fire Dancer is back from the dead again."
"You can't go there. Wait here, Risa. It's too dangerous. She was tired of hearing this kind of thing."
"How is he?"
she asked. "You said you can read his heart."
She saw the answer in Dustfinger's eyes.
"A bird will attract less attention than you would," she said, and put the seeds in her mouth before he could stop her.
Chapter 62 Black. The cell they threw Mo into was worse than a tower in the Castle of Night or the dungeon in Umbra. They had let him down on a chain, his hands bound, deeper and deeper down until the dark settled on his eyes like blindness. And the piper had stood there above him, describing in his nasal whine how he was going to bring Meggie and Risa here and kill them before his eyes. As if the piper's words made any difference. Meggie was lost already. Death would take her as well as him. But perhaps the great shape-changer would at least spare Risa and their unborn child if Mo refused to bind the Adderhead another book.
"Ink, Mortimer. Black ink surrounds you," he thought.
It was difficult to breathe in this damp void, but it made him feel strangely calm to think it was no longer up to him to go on with this story, on and on all the time. He was so tired of it. He dropped to his knees. The damp stone felt like the bottom of a well. As a child, he had always been afraid of falling into a well and starving to death, helpless and alone. He shuddered, longing for Dustfinger's fire, for its light and warmth. But Dustfinger was dead, extinguished by Orpheus's nightmare. Mo thought he could hear it breathing beside him, so distinctly that he looked for its red eyes in all that blackness. But there was nothing. Or was there? He heard footsteps and looked up.
"Well, how do you like it down there?"
Orpheus was standing on the edge of the shaft. The light of his torch didn't reach the bottom of it. The cell lay too deep for that. And Mo instinctively stepped back so that the darkness would hide him. Like a caged animal, he thought.
"Oh, so you're not talking to me anymore. Very understandable."
Orpheus smiled with self-satisfaction. And Mo's hand went to where his knife had been hidden, the knife so carefully concealed by Batista. Thumbling had found it all the same. Mo imagined thrusting it into Orpheus's flabby body. Again and again, the pictures that his helpless hatred conjured up were so full of blood that they sickened him.
"I'm here to tell you how this story goes on,
just in case you still think you play a leading part in it." Mo closed his eyes and leaned back against the damp wall. "Let him talk," he told himself. "Think of Risa. Think of Meggie.
Or perhaps he'd better not.
How had Orpheus heard about the cave?
All is lost, a voice inside him whispered. Everything. The composure that he had felt since the appearance of the white women was gone. Come back, he wanted to whisper. Please, protect me. But they didn't come. Instead, words ate into his heart like pale maggots.
Where did they come from?
All is lost. Stop it, he told himself. But the words ate their way on, and he writhed as if in physical pain.
You're so quiet. Ah, do you feel it already?
Orpheus laughed, happy as a child.
I knew it would work. I knew it when I read the first song. Oh, yes, I have a book again, Mortimer. In fact, I have three of them, full to the brim with Fenolio's words, and two of them are all about the blue jay.
Violante brought them to this castle, wasn't that kind of her? I had to make some changes, of course, move a few words here, a few more there. Fenolio is very kind to the blue jay, but I was able to put that right. Fenolio's blue jay songs, all neatly written down by Balbulus. Mo closed his eyes.
And by the way, the water isn't my doing,
Orpheus called down to him. The Adderhead has had the sluices to the lake opened. You won't drown, it doesn't rise high enough for that, but it won't be pleasant. At the same moment, Mo felt the water rising up his legs, as if the darkness had turned liquid, so cold and black that he fought for breath.
No, the water isn't my idea,
Orpheus went on, sounding bored.
I know you too well by now to think that fear of that kind would change your mind. I suppose you're hoping your obstinacy may yet mollify death, now that you haven't kept your part of the bargain.
Oh, yes, I know about the deal you did with death. I know everything.
But however that may be, I'll drive the obstinacy out of you. I'll make you forget your high-minded virtues. I'll make you forget everything except the fear, because the white women can't protect you from my words.
Mo wanted to strike the man dead, with his bare hands. But they were bound, he reminded himself.
At first, I was going to write something about your wife and daughter, but then I said to myself, no, Orpheus, that way he won't feel the words himself.
How the moon-faced creature was enjoying every syllable he spoke, as if he had dreamed of this moment. There he is up above, thought Mo, and here I am down in a black cell, helpless as a rat that he could kill at any moment.
No, Orpheus went on. No, I said to myself, let him feel the power of your words for himself. Show him that from now on you can play with the blue jay like a cat plays with a mouse,
except that your claws are made of letters. And Mo felt the claws. It was as if the water were seeping through his skin and straight into his heart, so black. Then came the pain, as violent as if Mortola had shot him a second time, and so real that he pressed his hands to his chest, thinking he would feel his own blood between his fingers. Although the darkness blinded him, he saw it stain his shirt and his hands, and felt his strength fading away as it had before. He could hardly stand upright. He had to brace his back against the wall to keep from slipping into the water that was already up to his waist.
Risa, oh God, Risa, help me!
Despair shook him like a child, despair and helpless rage.
I wasn't sure at first what would work best.
Orpheus's voice cut through the pain like a blunt knife.
Should I send a few unpleasant water monsters to visit you? I have the book here that Fenolio wrote for Jacopo. It has some rather nasty creatures in it. But I decided on another far more interesting way. I decided to drive you mad with beings out of your own head, come to haunt you with old fears, old anger, and old pain, all dammed up in your heroic heart, locked away, but not forgotten. Bring it all back to him, Orpheus, I told myself, with some added images that he's always been afraid of. A dead wife, a dead child. Send them all down to him in the darkness. Let him drown in his own anger.
Who feels like a hero when he's trembling with fright and knows it comes from nowhere but himself? How does the blue jay feel when he dreams of bloody slaughter? How does it feel to doubt your own sanity? Yes, I told myself, if you want to break him, that's the way. Let him lose himself. Let the blue jay howl like a mad dog. Let him trap himself in his own fear. Let loose the furies who can kill him so cleverly from the inside. Moe felt what Orpheus was describing, even as the other man spoke, and he realized that Orpheus had already read the words aloud some time ago with a tongue as powerful as his own. Yes, it was a new blue jay song, telling how he lost his mind in a damp black cell, how he nearly drowned himself in his despair, and how at last he begged for mercy and bound the other head another white book, his hands still shaking from hours in the dark. The water had stopped rising, but Moe felt something brush past his legs. Breathe slowly, Mortimer. Breathe very steadily. Shut out the words. Don't let them in. You can do it. But how, when a gunshot had just entered his breast again, when his blood was mingling with the water and everything in him cried out for revenge? He felt feverish again. Feverish, and yet so cold. He bit his lip to keep Orpheus from hearing him groan, pressed his hand to his heart. Feel it. There isn't really any blood there. Maggie isn't dead, even if you see that image as clearly as Orpheus could write the scene. No, no, no. But the words whispered, yes, and he felt as if you were breaking into a thousand tiny shards. Throw your torch down, guard. I want to see him. The torch fell. It dazzled Moe and drifted on the dark water for a moment before going out. Well, well, so you do feel them. You feel every single word, don't you? Orpheus looked down at him like a child looks at a worm he has put on a hook, fascinated to see it writhe. Moe wanted to put his head under the water until he couldn't breathe any more. Stop it, Mortimer, he told himself. What is he doing to you? Defend yourself. But how? He felt like sinking into the water just to escape the words, but he knew that even there they would be waiting for him. I'll be back in an hour's time, Orpheus called down. Of course, I couldn't resist reading at least a few nasty creatures into the water for you, but don't worry. They won't kill you. Who knows? Perhaps you'll even find them a welcome diversion from what your mind shows you. Blue Jay. Yes, you really ought to be careful when you choose what part to play. Get them to call me as soon as you realize that your high-minded approach is out of place here. Then I'll write you a few words to save you. Along the lines of, but morning came. And the blue jay's madness left him. Orpheus laughed and went away, leaving him alone with the water and the darkness and the words. Bind the book for the adder head. The sentence formed in Moe's mind as if written in perfect calligraphy. Bind him another white book, and all will be well. Again, pain shot through him so violently that he cried out. He saw Thumbling taking his fingers in a pair of pincers, saw the milksop dragging Meggie out of a cave by her hair, saw the dog snapping at Risa. He was shivering with fever, or was it from the cold? It's only in your mind, Mortimer. He struck his forehead against the stone. If only he could have seen something, anything but Orpheus's images. If only he could have felt something other than the words. Press your hands on the stone, go on. Dip your face in the water. Strike yourself with your fists. That's all that's real. Nothing else. Oh, yes. Moe sobbed and pressed his bound hands to his forehead. He heard a fluttering above him. Sparks sprang up in the blackness. The dark retreated as if someone were removing a blindfold from his eyes. Dustfinger? No, Dustfinger was dead, even if his heart refused to believe it. The blue jay is dying, the voice inside him whispered. The blue jay is losing his mind. And he heard fluttering again. Of course, death was coming to visit him,
and she wasn't sending the white women to protect him again. This time, she was coming herself to take him away because he had failed. Death would take first him, then Meggie. But perhaps even that was better than the words Orpheus had written.